New York has always been the grand human experiment. Can all the peoples of the world live together in one place? Can they help build something, even as they speak different languages, have different customs and cultures, or with different ideologies? As New York spread and grew, it did so with the people living there. From Manhattan, then to the Bronx, Brooklyn, Queens, then out to Staten Island, then New Jersey and Long Island as well. People spread to be close to the center of the world, New York City. Of all the European settlers to make New York home, none perhaps have become so synonymous with the city as the Italians and the Irish. In just 100 years, they had gone from getting off the boat to make their way in America to running the city itself. New Jersey, a state in its own right, was always tantalizingly close to the center of the world, but never in it, separated in more ways than one by the Hudson River. But on June 18th, 1994, it was the center of our world. Italy versus the Republic of Ireland, Giant Stadium, East Rutherford, New Jersey. The Italians had a lineup with players that would make many people's greatest of all time team. Tassotti, Castacorta, Baresi, Maldini, Donadoni, Albertini, Roberto Baggio, and more. But in the stands, the Italians were vastly outnumbered. Tens of thousands had made the trip from Ireland, tens of thousands more who lived in the United States and claimed Irish heritage had turned up too, a home game in the heart of New Jersey. Ray Houghton scored a sublime goal to give us the lead early on, but without doubt, the day belonged to one man, Paul McGrath. In one of the most outstanding performances in an Irish shirt, McGrath had been the impenetrable wall that the Italians simply could not break. McGrath had had his demons with alcohol, but on this day, he had managed to keep them in one pocket and Roberto Baggio in the other. Houghton scored the goal, but it was McGrath that won the game. This was USA 94, and Ireland were back in the World Cup. Hello and welcome to this week's Green Shoots, a history of Irish football with me, Caelan Kerwin, and Gary Spain. Coming up on this week's show, we're talking about the Republic of Ireland's USA 94 World Cup adventure, a tournament that promised so much, but is that how it turned out? Don't forget, you can listen to us on a host of audio platforms, including Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Wherever you listen, make sure you subscribe and turn on notifications for the podcast so that you know exactly when the new podcast of the show comes out. Share the show on your own social media to spread the history and heritage of Irish football as well. Now, let's get on with this week's show. Gary, in our last podcast, we talked about the long road it took to get us to the USA 94. We got there. As preparations kind of build up and come towards USA 94, you kind of touched on it briefly in the last podcast about maybe the team needed a little bit of revamp. Maybe some people felt the team was probably getting a little bit over the hill in terms of the players that we had. So what was happening from that point of view?
Well, and I mean, they provided a massive boost to the squad, and they became, I mean, there were three young men, Gary Kelly, Jason McAteer, and Phil Babb. And they arrived on the scene together. They were making an impact as well across the water. And they were seen as three cool. They were certainly a huge hit with the public. They became kind of national superstars as well. They were known as the Three Amigos, but they were also hugely important players, and they were players that made a difference. And they gave the squad, it was actually just needed a little bit of a boost. It needed a few players to cover for injuries, etc., to give Jack a few more options. And I suppose going into March 94, we were feeling just that little bit better about things. I mean, it was fantastic to qualify. There was huge excitement around the World Cup. But there was also the feeling we want to go there and do something. And certainly my memory of late 93, early 94 was it's going to be very tough at the World Cup. Suddenly the guys come on the scene. Tommy Coyne, I suppose, became more of a player as well. He hadn't featured too much. And I suppose it's the warm-ups to the World Cup that gave us a huge amount of confidence as well.
So is it that kind of little bit of youth, I suppose, mixed in with that, the old heads of experience gives us that kind of shot in the arm, I suppose, to see us through?
Yeah, it was a shot in the arm. And I mean, you got to remember at that stage that, I mean, football consumed the Irish public. It was all people were talking about. Everybody wanted to go. I mean, the talks, the numbers traveling to America were just incredible. I mean, everybody wanted to be behind the team. They were getting pages and pages in the newspapers. So the likes of Gary Kelly, Phil Vabb, Jason McAteer, they were a godsend to the journalists. They gave them something else to write about. They just had a different appeal. They appealed to the... Oh God, I was young enough myself. I was only in my 20s. But these guys were just... they were younger still, and they were a breath of fresh air to the squad, to the team, to everybody.
Let's talk about the draw and the group that we got. What was the feeling when the draw was announced, and I suppose we had seen who'd we gotten in the group?
Yeah, so one of the stories that it was obviously wrong as well, but I don't know where it started, but everyone seemed to run with it, that we were going to Boston. So that, I mean, one of the groups, Group D, was based in Boston, and the story was that we were heading to Boston. And I mean, I knew it wasn't true. I mean, I knew that it was going to be done on the seating, etc., and they weren't going to change the groups just to suit us, you know. But there was certainly a feeling we were going to Boston, and that didn't make any sense. I mean, we were in a European group, as it was then. So we weren't actually... Switzerland were the lowest ranked. Switzerland and Norway were low-ranked European teams because they hadn't appeared that much in World Cup recently. We were in a group seeding with Spain, Russia, Netherlands, etc. And so we could get it. We were going to be the only European team in the group because part two was Africa and everyone else, basically. The seeded teams were all the likes of Germany, Argentina, Italy, etc., were all seeded, and USA as hosts. I mean, everyone wanted USA because they were considered to be, let's say, certainly the weakest top seed by a long way.
I just want to ask it because in the years previous, we had gone to the States, as we discussed in previous podcasts before. We had played in Foxborough, Massachusetts. So maybe it kind of gave people a false impression that that's roughly roundabout where we're going to end up. So Boston it is.
Well, I mean, yeah. So sorry, it is Foxborough. You are correct. It's not in Boston. I know it's quite a distance from Boston, but
they'd be very particular about that now.
They would. And I appreciate I'm totally wrong on that. But in reality, it was being seen as Boston, and very much from, I mean, look, I mean, there's such an Irish diaspora everywhere in the States, but in particular in Boston, there's a huge Irish influx. And I mean, I know people I actually know someone whose World Cup was in Boston, and he didn't go to any of our matches. He ended up watching Argentina. I mean, he planned everything, he booked everything, and it would have cost him a fortune to change it. And I mean, John is a well-known football person. He should have known better, is what I'm saying.
Called out on a podcast.
Well, they actually, the other thing they did was they fixed, if I remember correctly, they fixed before the draw, they actually fixed the seeds in their groups. So Italy were fixed for New York, Argentina were fixed for Boston, and they fixed the other teams around that. And they also put the tickets on sale. So the Italians had snapped up all the tickets for New York because they put the tickets on sale. They still do it for World Cups. They sell the tickets before the draw. So you'll be able to buy tickets for USA 26 next autumn before some teams have qualified and before the draw, etc. So, but in those cases, in 94, I know some people did buy tickets for Boston. They bought tickets for Argentina games. And I mean, there were a lot of Irish fans trying to offload the tickets afterwards. But certainly the Italians had bought the tickets for New York. And actually, I'm going to say New York, and I know it's wrong. It's New Jersey. That the Giants Stadium, as it was then, it's now known as the MetLife. So that is in Meadowlands in New Jersey. It's not in New York, but it's just...
And they would be very particular about that.
And they would, of course. But so if there's any Americans, and obviously I know you've got your own American roots, Galen, but I mean, I appreciate Rebecca and bad geographical errors consistently on the show at this stage. But please forgive me. But there was certainly a feeling that we were going to Boston, and that was in the newspapers. A lot of the fans were saying it. And I even remember even watching the draw on TV, and I think it was George Hamilton, but they'd drawn out groups. So our pot had already drawn out three of the teams, and they were coming to Group D. And I think it was George Hamilton said, well, if you believe all the stories, the next team out of the hat is going to be Republic of Ireland. And of course it wasn't. I think was it Romania? I can't even remember who was drawn in Argentina's group. But it certainly wasn't us. But and then we came out in Group E for Italy and New York. I mean, it was seen as a tough group, but there was going to be no easy groups in those days. Sorry, it was actually Bulgaria that came out with Argentina, not Romania. So we got Mexico from the, and we subsequently ended up with Norway, which was seen as being a difficult draw. We certainly could have got a better team from pot four. And I suppose the second World Cup running, we ended up with three European teams in our group, which was a slight disappointment. I think most people would have preferred to have got Argentina. Well, we definitely wanted USA, but certainly if not, to have got Argentina or Brazil, just because there's always a special glamour about, particularly playing Brazil in the World Cup, but Argentina obviously now as well. So, but it was what it was. We had Italy, and then the first game was going to be Italy in the Giants Stadium, and what a way to open the World Cup.
Absolutely, yeah. Huge, massive game in a big stadium against Italy. It's one of those kind of games that kind of has trickled into almost folklore, myth and legend of Irish football. But I suppose from a fan's point of view, give us a perspective on what it was like in the build-up of that game as well.
Well, I suppose we had the build-up to the World Cup now, of course, still. We had some important games to play. We drew with Russia in Lansdowne Road, and then we went to Tilburg in southern Netherlands to play the Dutch. And I suppose that was a sign that, hey, we're not quite over the hill yet, because we got a really impressive 1-0 win, Tommy Coyne with the goal, and we played really well and beat a very impressive Dutch side that night, and we were worthy winners, and suddenly thinking, yeah, we can do damage at this World Cup.
Well, I mean, beating the Netherlands, whether it's a friendly or not, away should always be something that should be triumphed.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it doesn't come around too often, you know.
So yeah, it's those kind of friendlies that in the run up to the World Cup, we play Bolivia in Dublin. Yeah. As well at Lansdowne Road, and then another good victory away to Germany.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was a good 1-0 home win over Bolivia, who'd also qualified for the World Cup. And then in May 94, we go to Hanover to play the Germans, to play the world champions. And Germany didn't lose home games. Their last home defeat had been that shock Euro 88 semi-final defeat by the Dutch in Hamburg. They hadn't lost at home since. They were the favourites for the World Cup. They were the holders. And, I mean, it was a huge test for us. Now, I should point out, I think the FIFA rankings at that stage, we had reached, perhaps it was after that game, we had reached sixth in the world. So it's the highest we've ever been. I think it was after Germany. But we were a serious footballing nation at that point as well. And particularly We went to Germany, Gary Kelly, Tony Cascarino, goal in each half, and we beat them in Hanover. And that really laid down a marker to go to the home of the world champions where they didn't lose and to beat them 2-0. And that was their send-off game for the World Cup. And it was certainly a shocker for them. And it was a huge boost. And Jack had made a couple of changes as well. And you're saying, hang on a second, these guys, is he going to pick Ray Houghton or is he going to pick Jason McAteer on the right side of midfield? And it gave him options, but it also gave Jack problems.
As any manager in that situation would love to have, you want to be able to be in indecision about which player is best, which player you want to bring in for a period at least anyway. And so we bring the Czech Republic to Dublin. Does that maybe change people's views at all, or do we just shrug it off and go, it's a friendly?
I mean, I was obviously at it. I can't remember too much about it. I think maybe the euphoria beating Germany, because it was kind of shrugged off. Now, we were, from what I can remember, we were well beaten, but I think it was kind of, it's a bit of a party. We're going to America. The focus is on the Italy game, and maybe we made too much of the Germany game and not enough about the Czech game, but certainly it was maybe a small wake-up call to actually be beaten 3-1 at home.
Yeah, so we lose 3-1 at home. It's off to the United States. As a fan, what do you do to get yourself there, and how do you get yourself there, and what happens, I suppose, in the days in the run-up to the first game against Italy?
Well, I mean, the other thing to point out was there was an absolute scramble for tickets. And I said it before, I felt very aggrieved because I don't know anybody else who'd been to all 12 qualifiers, all 6 away games. And I appreciate I got my Windsor Park tickets. Obviously didn't get those from the FAI, but I actually got turned down for tickets for USA 94, which certainly rankled at the time. And now I did get tickets. My father helped a lot and put a lot of pressure on people in the FAI. So I actually found out the night of the Sligo Rovers Limerick FAI Cup semi-final, which got postponed and played midweek, that my dad had actually been allocated 2 tickets, but they were for me. He didn't go himself, actually. So it had been, and I mean, it had been a sweat because tickets, I remember there was talk of $800 for a ticket for the Italy game, which it's an absolute fortune now, and it was an even bigger fortune in those days. So, I mean, it was a huge deal for me to get tickets for the games. Now, I'd actually managed to get McDonald's ticket. I think it was McDonald's. It was one of the sponsors' tickets. I'd managed to get sponsors' tickets for the Mexico game in Orlando, and I also gambled on us being in the round of 16 in Orlando, because I'd actually planned the trip to start in New York. I'd friends in New York, so I was actually there was five friends working. I only knew one of them, and I knew his brother kind of less so. But there was five Irish guys working in Manhattan for the summer, and they were renting a one-bedroomed single bed apartment in Manhattan. And I mean, every night, 4 of them were sleeping on the floor, and one of them got. But they were doing shift work, so the bed was being rotated as well. I mean, it sounds crazy, but that's the way it was in those days. And I was the 6th guy into the apartment, and they actually gave me the bed the first night, but I was on the floor for the rest of it.
A luxury for your first night, was it? Welcome, not going to get that.
Yeah,
anymore.
No. Yeah, absolutely, and I mean, there was a scramble for tickets then as well, but strangely enough, actually, the day before the game, suddenly tickets were very plentiful for the Italy game, and there was loads of Irish getting tickets. The Italians, how we laughed, but it actually proved to be prophetic. They actually sold the tickets to the Irish on the basis that we'll be going home early and they'll be in the final, so they'll get plenty of other chances to see Italy. And ironically, as it turned out, they proved to be right. But yeah, how we laughed after the game on the bus.
But like, yeah, it is true, and I suppose stories like that are multiplied by, you know, thousands and thousands as people came over, and you know, the stories of people turning up in New York and basically not actually having a place to stay, but they were in New York, they were in New Jersey, and they'll find something somewhere.
Oh, there was huge amount. I mean, people were looking up long lost relatives, and because I mean, it was very expensive to go to the States in those days. And I actually, my late grandmother had friends in Orlando, and we actually ended up stayed with them. So I mean, I didn't have to pay for I think pretty much one or two hotel nights in the whole trip, because we ended up with friends that invited us to stay in Orlando, and I got to stay sleeping on the floor in that apartment. But I mean, it was a roof over my head, and I was going to say,
you don't care, do you? You just want someone to lay your head down, and that's all that matters.
Exactly. And I mean, obviously, I was a lot younger. It's whatever, 31 years ago. So I was still in my 20s. And it was different times. And it would have been very, very expensive. I mean, a lot of fans were finding relatives. They were finding places to stay. They were finding ways around it. There was all sorts of stories, all sorts of things happening. But it was certainly a shock to go into the Giant Stadium and just see a sea of green, because, as it said, the Italians had got, before the draw had been made, the Italians had bought up all the tickets. We were expected to be outnumbered about 10 to 1, but it was actually the other way around.
There's the history of New York as well. The I suppose the grand experiment of New York, which was how, you know, putting all the peoples of the world in one city and seeing if they can make a go of it. And of course, the Italians and the Irish were huge sections of that, and helped to literally build New York City as well. So there's a huge backdrop of history there between, I suppose, not just the kind of for the match, but the historical resonance of it in New York City and New Jersey.
Absolutely. And I mean, I did talk about the huge Irish population in Boston, and Boston is obviously very Irish, but there's still a massive expat Irish community. And as you said, from so many other communities in the whole melting pot that is New York. So it's a fantastic city, and it was an amazing place to be in the summer of 94. With so many people. But the other thing about New York in the summer of 94 was, you may not have even known the World Cup was on, because there were so many other things was happening. I mean, the Knicks were in the NBA Finals. O.J. Simpson famously had driven his Bronco, and I mean, I think that was my first night, and I think I arrived on if I remember rightly, it was the Thursday of the opening game, and I arrived on the Thursday. Maybe it was the Friday, but I think it was the Thursday, and we were in a bar, the Knicks were away on TV, and everyone was talking, and suddenly O.J. Simpson happened, and I'd never heard of him. Yeah. And the whole bar went silent, and you couldn't say a word. It was O.J., and I said, who's O.J.? You have to know who O.J. is, you know. And I'd never heard of him, you know. It's
quite incredible. At the time, though, as well, it was that thing where soccer just still wasn't. It was going on in the World Cup, but it wasn't a mainstay for Americans. They kind of knew it was going on, but it wasn't. You know, if you gave them a choice between, you know, their baseball team or their basketball team or whatever, they were going to choose them over whatever this thing is over here.
Absolutely. I mean, there was no MSL, there was no MLS at those stage either. That didn't get for another couple of years. The World Cup was used, I think, to bring football, or soccer as they call it, to the US.
Kickstart.
And kickstarted. And I mean, they had an incredible tournament. They got to the knockouts, which I think surprised a lot of people. And certainly they did grow into the tournament, but that first weekend, I mean, if you're only seeing Irish, most of the Americans, I mean, the other event that was on in New York that weekend was actually the Gay Olympics, and it was seen as being a bigger deal. There was more people around for that. And that was on in New York. And so the World Cup and Italy against Ireland was very much playing second fiddle. It mattered so much to the Irish and to the Italians, I suppose, but your average New Yorker didn't really know it was on.
So to the game then, it's quite an incredible game for a number of reasons that we'll probably get into. But what's it like being at Giant Stadium and that atmosphere with 80,000 people and almost it being a home game, I suppose, with a much larger crowd?
Yeah, I mean, we were all geared up for going to the game. We've to sing our hearts out because we're going to be outnumbered 10-1. And you go into Giant Stadium and all you see is a sea of green. And it was green everywhere. There must have been 50, 55,000 Irish fans there that day. And I mean, they came from, well, so many came from home, but they also came from all over the States as well. Hmm. And I don't know how they all got tickets, but somehow they all managed to get tickets.
They bought them off the Italians.
Well, they bought them off the Italians. And I hope nobody paid the $800, but...
So talk to us about the game then. When we kicked off, when we started, what was the feeling about? I mean, obviously Italy are always going to be a dangerous side, but was there a feeling that we could do something?
Yeah, I mean, as I said, we were ranked sixth in the world coming into that. There was a feeling we could do something, but Italy were seen as being the top team in the group. They were seen as being potential winners. So certainly going into the game, a draw would have been seen as a fantastic result. And we certainly would have been hoping for a 0-0 or a 1-1. So I don't think there's too many people going into that game felt we were going to beat Italy. And they were a hugely talented side. I mean, Roberto Baggio was down as one of the best players in the world at the time. And he probably was, you know. And they had just so many talented players right throughout the team. Italian football in the 90s, it was the league in Europe. Mm. I mean, Serie A, they got the best players. Now, appreciate they weren't all Italian. They came from around Europe. But it meant that there was a huge respect for the Italian league, for the Italian players. And it was seen as being a really difficult first game up. And, I mean, Ray Houghton scored after 11 minutes. It was an incredible start. He chipped Padluca, who was a top keeper at the time as well, and an absolutely exquisite chip over him and into and right in front. I mean, the main body of Irish fans behind the goal were behind Padluca's goal to see. So I was right behind the goal to see that goal, as were, let's say, the tickets. Now, there was Irish fans everywhere in the stadium, but behind that goal was all green.
The thing that I love about it is number one, I suppose, Ray Houghton himself, because am I right in saying he kind of fought his way back in the team, got himself back into the team, into Jack's favour, and I suppose that's how he ended up starting that day, that he'd kind of fallen out a bit in terms of maybe form or something like that, but he was back, and he said to Jack, put me in, I'll do a job for you.
That's it, exactly. And I mean, there was a feeling that Jason McAteer should start, you know, in Ray's place, you know, and it was a strong feeling. I mean, Phil Babb did start at the back and he was superb. But I mean, no matter who else you talk about, Paul McGrath that day was just out of this world. Mm. He was just incredible. I mean, he was the star. He was man of the match. And yeah, Ray got the goal, but... Paul just blotted Roberto. He was everywhere, absolutely everywhere. And incredible.
Absolutely, yeah. Possibly one of the greatest Irish performances, a single player of all time, I would argue. But just on Ray's goal, it's only kind of... So obviously I went back and watched again, etc. But it's the ridiculous audaciousness of this this guy having a chip over, you know, arguably one of the best goalkeepers in the world at the time as well.
Absolutely, you know,
and slots it perfectly over his head and drops it into the net. It is a fantastic goal, absolutely sublime goal, like a finesse touch of a goal that just is staggering the more times you watch it.
Yeah, I mean, there was such a fine margin. I mean, he had to get it over Pagliuca and still had to get it just onto the crossbar as well. There was a very, very small target to aim at, and somehow he got it just perfectly and just right.
And I suppose that leads then to to what, 80-odd minutes of sitting behind the sofa and chewing your jersey and whatever else.
Yeah, it was Stuttgart Mark II, I suppose. Yeah. There was, and I mean, this was Italy as well. They had such a team, and it just, the game did seem to go on forever. You know, it was, it was, what was it, 79 minutes, but it felt like 79 hours.
And we talk about Paul McGrath. It was such an immense performance by him. There's that period in the game that it probably gets played back a lot, but there's that 30 seconds where, you know, he blocks a shot, he gets up, he heads the ball back out, he gets back up, he gets up and he heads the ball back out again. So in the space of like 30 seconds, he's cleared the ball three times. And it's the kind of performance I would say that his teammates around him really took to as well. That gave them heart. That gave them determination to do that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Phil Babb had a great game beside him as well, but he must have come on and really, he must have taken great confidence. But Paul was just majestic. And I mean, okay, Packy Bonner kept a clean sheet and he was the hero in Stuttgart, and he had to make some saves, but he didn't. It wasn't the case of the Stuttgart 88 where it felt like it was Packy playing England on his own at some point. But certainly it was Paul McGrath who was absolutely majestic. And as you say, he made so many blocks, so many interceptions, cleared so many balls. And it felt like he was backs to the wall for a lot of the game. And it did seem to go on forever. It was certainly it was just such a nervous time because, I mean, the feeling was, wow, if we can beat Italy, what does that set up for the World Cup, you know?
Absolutely, yeah. And I suppose as well, it was a proper kind of, how would you say, a proper Jack Charlton performance, wasn't it, against perhaps you can argue a superior talented team in terms of individual skill. But it was teamwork that won us that game, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it was everybody was a hero. Everybody did their part. And I mean, from the subs as well, it was a battle for the whole 90 minutes. And I think the crowd did their part as well because the atmosphere was electric. It was all Irish. You could only hear the Irish. And it was, it had to give the players a lift as well, having so many Irish. I mean, it's the biggest Irish crowd ever in a foreign stadium. You know, incredible numbers that, but probably you'd never get again because, I mean, you wouldn't get 50,000 Irish fans. Well, if we do, maybe we'll prove me wrong. Please, please, please. I would so much love that somebody plays this clip and say you'll never get 50,000 Irish fans. And if we're in the MetLife next year and there's 60,000 Irish fans, I would love to be proven wrong. And
absolutely.
You can take a note of it. But I'd love to have Ireland in the World Cup next year. But I don't know. It's just...
It must have been some place to be that night in New Jersey and New York. As you say, tens of thousands of Irish fans. I mean, literally painting, you know, the town green, Irish people everywhere. It must have been an extraordinary kind of party.
It was an incredible party. I mean, I remember something else. I mean, I'd learned Italian, obviously, for Italia 90, and I've probably forgotten most of it now, but as we were going out, the Rai Uno, the Italian channel, were there and they were filming the fans. So I was just screaming, Arrivederci Italia, Arrivederci Italia. And the producer behind me was going, come on, up, up, higher, higher. And I was just screaming it. They were actually loving it, I'm sure. I never heard if it was played back in Italy, but certainly the people there on the camera and the producer were absolutely delighted with it. But I did make the rather stupid decision to get a flight out of New York at some ridiculously early hour the following morning. So it's
that seems to be your fault, in fairness.
that was totally my fault, and it seemed like a good idea at the time. I appreciate it. I didn't want to overstay my welcome as well, because these guys were working, and I knew one of them. Michael is a very good friend of mine. I knew his brother kind of a little bit. He was a younger brother who was a few years younger, so I didn't really know him that well. And it was three other guys that I never met until I got to New York. So I was kind of imposing, you know, it was overstaying my welcome. So we had the idea of getting this stupid o'clock early flight out of New York, which actually meant we didn't go to bed. We just stayed out, partied, went and collected my bag at something like 6 a.m. in the morning, and then got a taxi to, I think it was LaGuardia I was flying out of, if I remember rightly. It wasn't Kennedy anyway. I think it was LaGuardia. And arrived, I think it was 30 or 45 minutes before the flight. Didn't have a lot of time in the end, but definitely made the flight.
Absolutely. Down to Orlando for the game against Mexico. And if the game against Italy was us on the highest high, the Mexico game, I suppose, pulls us back down to the real world again.
Yeah, and the following day, now actually, if I probably had planned it better, I could have gone to Washington en route. I know quite a few Irish fans did go to Washington for Norway-Mexico the next day. So Norway had beaten Mexico in the RFK Stadium in Washington, D.C. So that was kind of on the route down to Orlando. We watched that on the TV. But, we'd gone from fantastic win over Italy, playing Orlando, I think it was noon or 12:30 kickoff in the middle of the day. The kickoffs were all set for European TV because it wasn't such a big deal in the States at the time. I think it was a Friday, if I remember rightly. Could have been a Thursday. I could be wrong on that, but it was an afternoon kickoff, and the heat was just something else. I've never experienced anything like it. The Citrus Bowl in Orlando, it was a big open bowl. There was no shade, no shelter. And it was absolutely stifling. I think it might have hit 115 at some stage Fahrenheit. It was certainly over 100 for the whole game.
Crazy heat.
And I don't know how someone played in it. It was really, I was suffering even sitting watching the game. And as I said, we actually got those sponsor tickets. So I had two seats on the halfway line. They're actually fantastic tickets. We didn't actually sit. My then girlfriend, later wife, was with me for the Orlando part, and so we just decided to use the good tickets rather than go behind the goal with the Irish fans. but it made no difference. You were still out in the heat. You were still battling the temperatures, and but it was intense. It was just so hot.
Yeah, and I suppose the best way to describe that Mexico game was just, it was a really frustrating game for us, really, wasn't it? It just kind of, strangely, I just, even looking back from my own memory, we never seemed to really get into the game, really.
It didn't. They did score two good goals. They really opened us up either side of half time. But I kind of felt we had chances, we didn't get going, as you're saying, we didn't take our chances. There was the whole row then with John Aldridge and the guy, I think he was wearing a yellow cap, that happened right in front of us. And he was just some official who was just being a Jobsworth or whatever, you know.
I do remember. They showed that in the live broadcast as well. They certainly did over here anyway. And you could tell exactly what John Aldridge was saying to that guy on the television. And you're like, not sure that's properly, I'm not sure that they want to broadcast that.
But he did get on, and he got a crucial goal. I mean, and actually at 2-1 down, we had actually still had chances to get a draw. We really felt if there was another few minutes, we could have got a 2-2 draw, but it wasn't to be. And well, later on that day, Italy beat Norway 1-0. So it turned out after two games, everybody was level on, was it 2 points for a win then or 3 points for a win? I actually can't remember. I think it was 3 points for a win then. Yeah, it was three points for a win by 1994. So it had been 2 points for a win in qualifying. It was 3 points for a win at the group stages. That's when it switched over, if I remember rightly.
Yeah.
So all four teams were level on 3 points. We all had the same goal difference. And we had the slight advantage in that ourselves in Mexico were 2-2 and Italy and Norway were 1-1, if I remember correctly.
That's right, yeah.
So we had a slight advantage. And we knew that if we could draw with Norway, we were guaranteed to be in the next round.
Yeah. Talk to us about that Norway game then. We head back then to East Rutherford, New Jersey, for a game against them. What kind of game was it? Was it a tense affair?
Yeah, it was a funny game. It was I think this was Norway's tactics. In the first 45 minutes, it felt like we absolutely battered them. So we took control of the game. We ran the game, had all the chances, and they were probably lucky or relieved to go in at halftime 0-0. But I think their manager said afterwards, I think it was Drillo Olsen was the manager, and he said afterwards the plan was to keep it tight for 45 minutes and then to have a real go at us in the second half. And basically, I felt we were hanging on a bit in for a lot of the second half, and a goal for them would have knocked us out. And, well, we actually weren't getting good updates from Italy, Mexico, but we did hear it was 0-0 at halftime in that game as well. But it wasn't, I certainly wasn't getting updates, and those around me, we didn't know what was going on in the Italy-Mexico game. But the feeling was, if we got a draw, we were definitely through. And we were hanging on a little bit in the second half. Norway certainly had their chances, and they just couldn't put the ball in the net. But I think overall, on the 90 minutes, we definitely deserved the draw. But certainly in the second half, Norway looked the more likely to score. That's certainly my memory of the game anyway.
Yeah, and that confirms us as through and Norway out then. So how are the placings decided again? Is it goal difference or goals for?
So what actually happened was Italy and Mexico drew 1-1. So Norway had finished, all four teams had finished on 4 points. Mm-hmm. We all had the same goal difference, but Mexico had three goals scored against. We were 2-2, Italy were 2-2, and Norway were 1-1. So Mexico won the group. Ourselves and Italy were dead level on goal difference, goal scored. And in those days, the tiebreaker after those two was the head-to-head. So we finished second in the group on the head-to-head against Italy. So they finished third, but the four best third-place teams, because that was an important caveat there, the four best third-place teams were going through, and certainly Italy would have known that 4 points would have guaranteed your place in the round of 16. So three of the four teams went through, and Norway went home on 4 points when actually other teams and other groups were going through on 3 points. So it's one that they felt probably, I wouldn't say cheated because they weren't cheated, but they were certainly very unfortunate to take 4 points from the three games and to end up bottom of the group going home was certainly incredibly unlucky.
Yeah, it was a tight win. They had won a game as well, and I suppose you probably hit the nail on the head there when they just probably didn't take their chances against us, and ultimately that was their undoing really. But I just wanted to ask you quickly as well, just on the points change from 2 to 3, what was the reasoning behind moving to 3 points for a win? Was it just to make it more clear of a winner or more clear of a points difference?
Yeah, I think it was to encourage. I mean, I suppose the Italian 90 had been seen with a lot of negative football, so it was to encourage more attacking football. And 3 points for a win was starting to become the norm in a lot of leagues as well at that stage around Europe, certainly. Mm. So it did encourage teams to go for the win rather than settle for 1 point each. You know, the fact that you gain another 2 points if you can get the winning goal would maybe encourage more attacking football.
To probably cancel out things like Mick McCarthy and Ruud Gullit agreeing before a game in Italian 90. So we're in the knockout stages of the World Cup. Who do we come up against?
Well, so we didn't actually. Now, I must confess, I had gambled on us being in the round of 16 in Orlando as runners up in the group. And I'd actually bought tickets for that game. And I'd also planned if we were knocked out that obviously I would stay for that game and go home after it. So I was actually, to be honest, I was delighted. But most Irish fans were actually disappointed the way it worked out, because had we won the group, we would have stayed in New York. Now, I was already flying straight back to Orlando after the Norway game, come what may. And then I was going to make my plans where to go for the round of 16. But a lot of fans, they were already in New York. Had we won the group, we would have stayed in New York, which Mexico did, and they were playing Bulgaria. The third place, I think it was pretty much known that third place could end up in Foxborough, in Boston, with all the Irish. So again, that was easily accessible from New York. And where, I mean, all the fans were, most of the fans were in New York. Mm. And certainly, I think pretty much all the other Irish fans, apart from myself, were disappointed to be in New York and then looking at going to Orlando a few days later. And I know friends of mine actually went home and said, we'll try and get back out to Orlando, and they couldn't get back out. The flights to Orlando went actually nuts. They were several hundred dollars because some of my friends in New York were looking at the going and just couldn't get down there. And a lot of Irish fans actually did miss the round of 16. Mm. But to be honest, I was secretly glad that we were in Orlando, because otherwise I would have been down in Orlando trying to get a flight back to New York or back to Boston or wherever. And so my lucky guess or gamble worked. And well, also I had a place to stay in Orlando, so it actually suited to spend a few days there. And my girlfriend was going home from Orlando. She didn't go up to the Norway game, but she was staying for the round of 16.
I suppose that's the thing about the United States, don't it? We'll see it, I suppose, next year in World Cup 2026. It's such a large country that to change tack and go, actually, you know, I'm going to go there, it's such a huge deal. It's not like, and this is, I'm not criticizing it by any means, by the way. I'm just saying, you know, if you're in Italy or you're in Germany, etc., you hop on a train or you get on a bus and you're there probably within a couple of hours, or a ferry, whatever. Whereas America, it's 5-6 hour flights. It's, you know, 19 hours on a bus or something like that to get to these places. So it's so spread out and so big that any kind of change in plan does become a big deal.
Well, it was huge. I mean, I if I remember correctly, we had a 70, the third place in our group, I think I'm remembering this right, had a 70% chance of being in Boston and a 30% chance of being in LA. And then the runners-up were in Orlando and the group winners were staying in New York. And I mean, you can imagine the bulk of the Irish fans. I mean, I was flying out that night. The Norway game kicked off, I think, at 12:30. So I was heading straight to the airport after the game to fly back to Orlando. But the bulk of the Irish fans were obviously back in New York, New Jersey. And those making plans to stay on, okay, again, Luckily, I did have plans to stay on anyway, and I would have gone on to Dallas had we gone further. But I just got lucky that I was flying back to Orlando that night. But the bulk of them were looking, oh, where are we going next? And it also at that stage, we were more likely to be playing Belgium than anyone else because they were top of the group. I think that was certainly the expectation I had at that stage was we were playing Belgium, but it turned out being the Netherlands.
Yeah, the Netherlands, what was the feeling about getting the Netherlands as well? Because I know it was a friendly, but we had beaten them 1-0 away in the Netherlands. Was there a feeling that we could certainly do to them what we had done to Italy?
Well, absolutely. I mean, it was very much seen as being a 50-50 game. If anything, we were seen as being kind of slight favourites. I mean, I had... the way the flights worked in those days was you had $50. Once you bought a transatlantic flight, you could buy a number of flights for $50. You could reroute yourself. So I had one flight left. And had we beaten the Netherlands, I had my flight back to New York to fly home after the Netherlands game, but I had the option to change it. But rather than change it from Orlando to Dallas, where the quarterfinal was, I was looking at ways to go to Dallas overland and then use the flight to go back from Dallas to New York to go home. And it was also possible to change your flight home for about $50 or $100. Can't remember what it was, but it was. There was a lot of planning going on.
Did you have like an equations board with, you know, X means Y over divided by brackets?
Yeah, I mean, that's what it was. And I mean, I think the day before the Dutch game, I went into U-Haul, which was, I don't know if it's still around in the States.
It is, yeah, massive. Yeah.
You can actually rent a U-Haul or they'll. So I was going to drive from Orlando to Dallas to drive a U-Haul for them. So I would have had to pay, so much to do it. But I think I would have been bringing some stuff for somebody as well. So I was getting the drive and I was getting a lift from effectively giving myself a lift. And I mean, I can't remember, but it was something horrendous, like 16, 18. I don't know what the drive is from Orlando to Dallas. I'd have to look it up
long,
again.
Very
and
long.
Certainly it was going to be very, very, very long, you know. But I mean, I had a few days to do it as well. But I mean, I had made the plans and obviously, as it turned out, I just got my last flight to go back to New York and fly home as planned.
Yeah, so, I mean, what do you say about this game anyway? I mean, it was another deeply frustrating game, I suppose, for us in USA 94.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I mean, it was a game of mistakes. I mean, yeah. There was one, I mean, Terry Phelan was badly at fault for the first goal. Packy Bonner, yeah. I mean, yeah, for the second one, we were two down at halftime. We played incredibly well in the second half. We had loads of chances to come back into it. We really had a go at them. Feel if we got one back, we might have got the equaliser, but it just wasn't to be. It just felt like it just wasn't our day. It wasn't even, I know people talk about the heat of Orlando. It was for Mexico, but it wasn't for the Netherlands. It was only about 80 degrees Fahrenheit. It was actually a very pleasant day, and it wasn't too hot or anything like that. It was just, and I mean, the Dutch had been the heat wouldn't really have been an advantage to the Dutch than it was to the Mexicans. But it just wasn't our day. They took their chances. Dennis Bergkamp, it was a very early goal. It was only about 10 minutes gone. And then Wim Jonk stuck a long-range one in before halftime that obviously Packy will have nightmares about.
Yeah, and it kind of felt really bad for Packy though, because he knew instantaneously that he'd not done it right, and the ball was going in the back of the net, and you could tell when the ball was in the back of the net, you could tell by his face, it was written all over his face. He was just like, "Oh man, that right there, that's on me." So he really felt for him, though.
Yeah, and he had been such a hero. And I mean, that was effectively, I think, the end of his career. And I mean, the other thing that really kind of, I know it didn't affect that goal, but Packy was, what I would consider, and I mean, what I grew up with as a goalkeeper was an old-fashioned goalkeeper who commanded their area, who stopped the shots, but they didn't have to be good with the ball at their feet. There was no Ederson or Allison's passing 60-yard passes, and Packy certainly wasn't that. The back pass rule came in a couple of years before that. So up to 1992, I think it was, you could pass the ball back to the goalkeeper and the goalie could pick up the ball. And we would certainly have had lots of back passes to Packy, just pick up the ball. These days, you're talking about a modern goalkeeper. They're like a midfield player was in those days with the way they could pass, control the ball. And certainly, it's fair to say, Packy Bonner was not... would never have made the midfield of Jack Charlton, or certainly not a Brazilian midfielder or the skill to pass the ball. He was a goalkeeper. He was there to stop the ball, to save goals.
He's a shot stopper. That's his job.
Shot stopper, exactly. Yeah, and he also commanded the area. I mean, he was an excellent goalkeeper, but it's certainly having to deal with playing the ball at his feet and all that. I think it did shorten his career because he was never comfortable with receiving back passes like that. That's my opinion anyway. But what a keeper, what a player.
Yeah, it absolutely fantastic, and gave us one of our great moments in Irish football history in Genoa as well.
Absolutely.
I know it's a discussion for a different type of podcast, but I'll die on the hill that a great shot stopper goalkeeper is worth far more than a goalkeeper that can chip a ball 40 yards. That's all I'm going
to
say.
I agree. I mean, it seems to be the big thing in modern football is to have a goalie who's good with his feet. I mean, your goalie's job is to save, but I'm very old-fashioned. And
stop them from
these
going into the net. That's it.
That's your job.
Just
you
do
know,
that.
So
how do we sum up USA 94? Is it with a mixed view?
I think mixed is probably fair comment. It wasn't. So we'd come back from Euro 88, even though we'd gone out in the group stages on a huge high, huge celebrations, great homecoming. Same thing in Italia 90, huge high, huge celebrations, great homecoming. Came back from USA 94, and it was a special one. I think it was in the Phoenix Park. I didn't get back in time for it, but it was a bit more muted. So there was a bit of celebration, but it was kind of, we could have done better. Even though we'd beaten Italy, I think just the manner in which we went out, the fact that we went out in the round of 16, the expectation was a lot higher for USA 94 than it was for Italia 90. Now, it was a great achievement to get to the knockout stages, but there was a feeling we could have done more. I mean, had we beaten the Dutch and gone and played Brazil in Dallas, which is what it would have been, a loss to Brazil in the quarterfinal, or God only knows. I don't think we'd have beaten the Brazil of Romario, Careca, etc. Then,
well, you make a good point there, and it reminds me to ask you. Like you've talked about previous tournaments that we were in before. We'd missed out in Euro 92, where you kind of argued that, you know, had we gone there, we probably would have had a reasonably good chance of maybe winning the whole thing. We were that good, you know. We were good in Genoa. We were good in Italia 90. You know, a slip of the ball here or there, but we also had a good chance of going far in that tournament as well. If kind of, I suppose, the break of the ball had kind of gone our way as well. But I think in the USA 94, I don't think it feels like that necessarily wasn't there. It feels like we were great to get there, but the feeling that we could go long into the tournament wasn't there.
Well, I think it was there maybe just before and after Italy, but it kind of, I mean, once we'd beaten Italy, people were thinking, God, we could be in the final, you know. And I mean, the irony is that Italy ended up in the final, and they lost the final on penalties. I mean, nobody else beat them. We were the only team to beat Italy in that World Cup. Brazil only beat them on penalties. So in theory, we could have. And I mean, I would argue as well that getting the Dutch, Mexico actually lost to Bulgaria, but Mexico had a much easier knockout game. Okay, they did win the group. Italy ended up playing Nigeria in the round of 16, which again would have been a, seen as a much easier game. So we ended up with the Dutch. Now, it could have been Belgium. It could have been Saudi Arabia. I know we had to wait a day to find out who we were playing. So my memory certainly is of coming out of the Norway game. I knew we were going to Orlando, and I was very happy with that. But my feeling at that point was we were playing Belgium, and it's the results the following day that meant, I think Belgium lost to Saudi Arabia, if I remember correctly. And then the goal, then there was a chance we could have been playing Saudi, who I think we would have beaten. But in the end, we ended up with the Dutch, you know. So I don't know. It's
Shoulda, woulda, coulda type of
stuff, but yeah. having said that, we were beaten 2-0. We gave away two goals in the first half. And I mean, the Dutch actually, in fairness to them, came so close to knocking Brazil out as well. Yeah. They were, maybe if with the draw had worked out differently.
hindsight is the most wonderful of things.
I reckon I was the only fan that wanted us back in Orlando. I think that's maybe I got bad karma for that, because I know anybody else I was talking to was basically planning for New York, Boston, and there was the risk of LA. I certainly remember that, but I think it was a 70% chance of Boston and a 30% chance of LA. So Foxborough, I know my geography is still wrong, but it was 70% Foxborough, 30%. Actually, it wasn't even LA, it was Pasadena, wasn't it? Mm. So I'm getting that one wrong as well. But so that was the way it was. So it would have been, it certainly, even in 94, it was a nightmare, as you said, to try and plan, to try and get around the country. Hopefully we'll have the same problem next year, because the way the World Cup is set up next year, we have three different countries. So
yeah,
you could be playing a group game in Mexico and a knockout in the United States.
Yeah, absolutely. One final question before we go for this podcast. You said there was kind of less euphoria at the end of it, and maybe beforehand the team was looking a bit tired. We had a couple of new players that came in, etc. Where does this leave Jack Charlton then? Is there any talk of maybe it's time to look at something new, or is that just absolutely not countenanced whatsoever?
Don't remember. I think there may have been some question marks at the time. I don't think there was I don't recall serious discussions, but I do kind of feel that was as well the start of football not being as all-encompassing for the whole country. Now, there was still huge interest and huge demand to go to the games, but certainly if you go fast forward to the next campaign, there wasn't the same numbers travelling away. Tickets got that little bit easier to get, and there was a feeling, I think, at the end of that World Cup, that maybe the whole country had, some of it had fallen a little bit out of love with football, and maybe there was other things to focus on in 95, 96. And because certainly it felt like, even we played Latvia in the, he was Latvia, we played in the first game after USA, and there wasn't the same travelling numbers, there wasn't the same hype around the game, etc. And even though we won 3-0, it wasn't the same as it had been for the build-up to all the games in qualifying for 94 and all the hype. There was just so much hype coming into USA 94, all the big deal about playing in America and everything like that. And it certainly, losing to the Dutch, it did go a bit flat, and maybe that was the start of the country not loving football as much as they did.
Yeah, and I could it have been as well that we'd been on for 6 years, we'd been on this huge kind of high about Irish football. It had been almost like this adrenaline drug to the nation for so long that people maybe were just getting fatigued with it, that it was I suppose almost this constant barrage all the time everywhere you went of Irish football. And that, as you said, people kind of went, right, let's change the record here and try and find something else.
Yeah, it's probably a bit of that. And it was probably maybe a feeling as well that, I mean, there were people talking in certainly mid-June 94 about winning the World Cup. And I mean, we were sixth in the world. It wasn't, okay, we wouldn't have been among the favourites, but it wasn't inconceivable. Mm. But certainly there would have been a feeling after the Dutch game that was our best ever chance to win a World Cup, but it's never going to happen now, you know. And I mean, I don't think there's too many people, even the most wildly optimistic fans, talking about us being in the MetLife in the middle of July 2026, beating Argentina to win the World Cup. But who knows? Maybe I said it here first. You know?
Maybe if they wheel out Messi on his canes and his wheelchair by then, that he'll be still good enough to play. But look, like all things, we have to get there first, which is the first hurdle. But it's been a fantastic journey with this USA 94 team and getting behind, I suppose, and getting the fan story as well. With yourself, it's certainly another one that goes down into myth and legend of Irish football at the time as well. And I'm sure in the podcast to come, we'll talk about all the campaigns that are to come as well. Some of them not so pretty for us, and some near misses again. But Gary, as ever, thanks very much for your insights and telling us about almost every game that you end up getting to go to. No, thanks very much, and till the next time. Thanks, Gary.
Okay. Cheers. Thanks, Gil.
Well, that's it for this week's show. Remember, wherever you listen to, make sure you subscribe and turn on notifications for the podcast so that you know exactly when the new podcast is out. Share the show on your own social media to spread the history and heritage of Irish football as well. And remember to support your local League of Ireland and Northern Ireland Football League clubs. It's our heritage. It's our game. Bye for now.